Welcome to Board Game Workshop. I'm your host, Chris Anderson. I just figured I'd do another design diary while I'm driving home from work. So I have not listened to my last design diary recently, so I may be skipping some things. Big things. I started working on two new designs since that one, because I cannot avoid new ideas. One was an attempt at a follow-up to In Vino Morte after Jason came on for the episode. We talked about that. I was inspired. Had a great idea. It seemed perfect in my head. I designed it out. It did not work. Talked it over. Things were too complicated. Tried to rework it again. Came up with something that seemed super simple and had all the great bits of original In Vino Morte, but with a different kind of twist on it. And then I tested it once, and it did not work at all. So I've kind of abandoned that for the moment. It's something I would like to do, especially if there is an audience of people that like In Vino Morte and they're looking for something else that is similar, but it's incredibly hard to design. The original is just so simple and pure that doing something close to it, it's hard to be different. And doing something different, it's hard to be that simple. So I don't know. I have not been able to crack that nut as of yet. But maybe I'll have a new idea and try again. But for now, I think that's back burner or just completely dead. And I'll have to start from scratch. So that came and went. The other design that came and has not left yet is... right now I'm just calling it a Dutch auction game. And like the theme is just a little pasted on based on the royalty-free art assets I had. So I went with a potion-making thing, but it could be other stuff. So for those who don't know, a Dutch auction is a type of auction that every round of bidding or over time, depending on how you set it up exactly. I don't know the specifics that would qualify as a real Dutch auction. But generally, the premise is items start at a set price, sometimes like normal value or a high value. And then over time, they get cheaper and cheaper until people buy them. I used to be like a Sony Rewards member or something. I forget how I even found out about it. But they would do, they called it a reverse auction, I think. But every week or every month or something, they'd have a couple of Sony products up on a Dutch auction system. So it'd start at like full MSRP, and they would have a set number of units. So actually I ended up getting a GPS system there back before phones had GPS and you didn't need things like that. But it was like a $400 GPS system that they put up at $400, and then like every hour or something it would drop $50. But there's only a limited number, so as the price goes down, and this is online, so a bunch of people around the world are looking at it, and presumably once it hits a price that they think is a good enough deal, they will buy one, and that's one less. And the ones that remain will keep getting cheaper. So there's an interesting balance in that Sony auction and in other Dutch auctions that you want to wait because it gets cheaper, but if you wait too long, you're going to miss the opportunity and someone else will get it. So there's a tricky balance of what price is right with. So it's similar to other auctions in that you want to get a good deal, especially with auction games, especially pure auction games where there's nothing else happening besides the auction itself. The way you win is by maximizing that value return by getting the items you need at a good enough discount, or sometimes pushing the price up for other people. But with a Dutch auction, it makes sense they call it a reverse auction because it's going down instead of up. And the feeling of it is kind of reversed because you're pushing your luck. And instead of overpaying for something like in a normal auction, if you quote-unquote mess up and go too far, you would overpay and that would be a bad value proposition for your strategy. But in the Dutch auction, because it's getting cheaper and cheaper, the risk isn't overpaying. The risk is not getting the item. So you wouldn't lose your money. So I think in that sense, quote-unquote, losing the auction doesn't feel quite as bad. You don't get the thing you wanted, but you're not out anything. So it's kind of, the worst is a net zero. And though you could still overpay in some sense if you buy it too early. But I think it feels less like overpaying. At worst, you're paying, you know, standard value or whatever you want to call it. So I've been interested in auctions for a while, and I also I love auction games in general a lot. A lot of designs I've worked on that I've not completed are auction games. Auction Comics being one of them, which has kind of been on the back burner for a while, but has been pretty developed. It's the main feedback I get from that is that people want just a little bit more to it. It's too much just the auction. They want something else, and I've not been able to figure that out. But eventually I will finish Auction Comics. That is a goal of mine, because it is so close to done. I just got to figure it out. But I love auction games. I love playing them. I love designing them. I love the concept of an auction is very intriguing to me, and I like the mental gymnastics that are involved in that and the different ways you can manipulate different kinds of auctions. So the Dutch Auction, very interesting thing. Not a lot of games include it. I think I looked it up, and I think there were maybe only 20 games that listed it. And for the most part, they were like a very small section of just a certain mechanism in the game works like a Dutch auction. But it's not even an auction game. It's just the way of like getting a resource or a turn order or something. So it seems very underrepresented in games in general. So I wanted to make a Dutch auction game. It started as more of just a mechanism idea, and really kind of a pure Dutch auction, and how can I build that into a game? What is the easiest way to use that system? So my idea for that is simply, I have cards that are the items being auctioned. They go in a row, and then you add coins to them when they're not bought, which is not a new system. That is a system used in other things, adding coins usually. I think it's in Small World, you want a certain item, you put coins on all the items before it, which, that's the thing that I love, putting coins on cards or tiles, and then people get those when they buy that thing, so it's more valuable. So similar to that. The difference being in this, that the coins on the card can be used to purchase that card. So if we have an acorn that costs $10, and no one buys it the first round, or actually it's every turn it goes up, so if the person who goes first doesn't buy the acorn on their turn, a coin gets added to that acorn. And the coins on it can be used to pay for it. So now, it's a $9 acorn. And if no one buys it the second turn, then it's an $8 acorn, and 7, and 6. And then it keeps going down, and will eventually hit 0. And then it will keep going below 0. So if no one takes the free acorn, it will keep getting coins added to it every turn that it's not bought. And when you purchase it, you pay for it with the coins on it, then you would pay any extra if that was not the price. But if there's more coins on it than the price, you get the extra. So you can actually earn money from, quote-unquote, buying items if they've gone long enough. So there's the incentive to wait because you can actually earn money, but also you just want to get a better price. But will someone else grab it? So I threw this together pretty quickly, had some royalty-free art I'd gotten from a Humble Bundle deal, so I threw it together with different... I went with potion ingredients, so like acorns and crystals and flowers and whatever. So I threw it together with a simple like range of values for each item, and the more expensive items, there were less of them. But there needed to be a goal, so why are you buying these items if there's absolutely nothing to do with them? That's not even a whole mechanism. There needs to be a reason. So for that, it was just building a set. So you could either build a set of matching items, and it would be, you know, an increasing value for the number of items in the set, or you could get a set of unique items. So pretty basic, just build a set by getting cards. And the Dutch auction mechanism worked very well in the test. But the general consensus of the group and myself is there was not a whole game. There was something missing. So it was just that mechanism. And you just got things, and the economy was a little off the rails, and the numbers were way off, because I just guessed, because it was the first version. So after that test, thinking on it, I decided to go with kind of a ticket to ride system for the goal. So you're still doing the Dutch auction for different potion items. And I changed the prices and amounts a little. I'm still working on distribution. But now you also get order cards. So each order requires 3 items. So there's 20 unique orders, 6 different items, if I remember correctly. So you'll get order cards similar to Ticket to Ride. You get a couple at the beginning of the game that you're trying to fulfill. And then through the game, you can eventually grab more if you want to try and do other ones. But you get penalized for not completing an order that you have by the end of the game. So you don't want to take too many because you'll get negative points. So that's the current system I have in place. I should be testing that my next meetup on Monday. So hopefully that goes well. But I think it's a nice, simple, straightforward game. It's easy to explain the rules. Full rules written out is less than a page, so that's nice. I've been working on a lot of more complicated games lately, and while I enjoy them and I really want to get them finished, Tin Engine and Ultra Corp specifically, they're complex games, which I want them to be complex games. That is the goal, to be a bigger, heavier game in both cases. But that takes a lot of effort to teach. So it's been nice to switch over and just try a lighter game that I can teach in a couple minutes and people just get it and we play through it quickly and get some feedback. So I think the goal is to kind of fall in between, or not in between, but similar to Splendor in like difficulty level and play style, in that each turn is a super quick thing where you see the item you want. Is it a price you're willing to pay? Yes or no? If yes, you grab it. If no, try to push to your next turn, see if it'll stick around. Right now I'm saying it plays up to 6, but with 6 it's kind of a little more difficult for things to stay around, so still ironing out the numbers, but I really enjoy the general concept. The mechanism works great, so it's just fine-tuning those numbers and then seeing if the potion orders work as a goal to help push people along, which hopefully they will. So that's the other one. And actually, Pegasus Spiele is doing a designer days. It's not this weekend, it's next weekend. It's 1 week from today, actually. So I signed up for that, and I'll be pitching Dutch Auction Game. So it doesn't have a name, and the theme is just based on. But I'll be pitching that, so hopefully it's a good fit. They do lighter games similar to that, so I think it could work out well. This will actually be my first pitch that's not for a design contest. I have somehow managed to avoid pitching games to publishers through several years and getting several things published and being a designer for a long time. But got to start sometime, apparently. So that should be interesting. And it's very early in the morning because they're in German time. So we'll see how that goes. And I'm sure I will do an episode about that process. Those are the two new games that popped up since the other Design Diary. But the other ones I'm working on. So Tin Engine, I have not done much with that. Actually, off the top of my head, I'm not even sure where I am with that. I know there were some changes that I made after the last playtest, and I'm not even sure if I ended up getting around to redesigning the cards for it. But it's moving along. But like I said, I needed a break from teaching it. Ultra Corp, also been taking a break from it, same reasons, but I did come up with a whole new system for that. So if you remember in the old version, there were advisor cards, and when you controlled the advisor, or you were the advisor, however I was wording it, you would have that card and it would have actions on both sides, and when you used one side, you would flip it over and those would reveal the actions on the other side, which was a neat system, but... And maybe I even talked about this in the last Design Diary, coming up with the idea for a track to move advisors up instead of having the card with the actions on it. Because it was just so overwhelming having multiple advisors with actions on both sides and what could you do and what you couldn't do and things changing. It was a relatively simple system in itself, but the fact that there were 15 advisors in the game and people are not controlling their own things, they're switching back and forth, there was a lot to keep track of. So the hope with the track system, which I've designed but not tested yet, is mainly it'll be just easier for players to kind of understand their options and limit those a little more. So now there are 3 advisor tracks, one for the Senate, one for business, and one for military. And then each track has, I think it's 20 spaces, well, 40 spaces, 20 pairs of spaces. So each space has a major and a minor action. So you'll pay some amount of influence. I forget the numbers. I think it's like triangle, so 1 to move 1 space, 3 to move 2 spaces or something like that. But you'll pay influence to move the advisor you control, so it's still, you'll get the card to show that you control that advisor, but the card itself is just to show you control it. It doesn't have any actions on it anymore. But you'll pay some number of influence to move that advisor up the track. And every space you pass, you do that space's minor action, so you'll actually get a bunch of actions if you pay more to move it along. And the minor actions are little things like raise the funding or do certain things. But every 5 spaces, the minor action is actually one of the bigger things in the game where it triggers the events that were kind of the main point of the game and still are. So running the businesses, voting on the laws, or resolving combat. So now those are quote-unquote minor actions. I need a better name for that. But so that way they'll happen even if you skipped over that space, because those spaces trigger as you pass them or land on them. And then there are major actions, which only the space that you land on after your movement will trigger, and those are bigger things, which off the top of my head I cannot remember what any of them are. But they are more a major action that you would want to move ahead a certain number of spaces to get that certain major action. And then along the way, you'll get some little bonuses and maybe trigger a combat or something with the minor actions. And then that also opened up some other things to change. So in the previous versions, wasn't really the goal, but it was kind of the, well, the end game trigger was the 5 corporations being condensed down into the 1 Ultra Corp. As it is now, I think that's, I don't know if it's not going to be a possibility, or part of this is just world building and theme, so it's more malleable. But I think the 5 corporations or 5 megacorps will stay through the whole game. And thematically, it's at the end of the game, the Ultra Corp forms and all of them combine, and then based on the Megacorp standing, they get certain like percentage points in the Ultra Corp, so you get points on that. So I'm reworking that and keeping the 5 corporations in, because the takeovers, I thought it was a really neat thing in the other versions. So like the Megacorps kind of like 1 drops it was every round earlier, now in the last version just kind of every so many actions they would get taken over and stuff. The problem was that as that happened, it really kind of reduced what was happening in the game. So the interesting part is controlling different corporations, and you get to like move in and out of this and that, and like who are you really invested in. Once it gets down to Megacorps, you're invested in one of them. It's not even particularly secret at that point, because it's a 50% chance they're right. And then at the end, there was only 1, so it kind of limited what even could be a scoring thing. So I had the whole victory points and missions thing, and it wasn't really working the way I wanted it to. So now the 5 Megacorps stay around for the whole game, and then at the end, their value standing is how much their influence is worth, and maybe that's points, which I'm still kind of iffy on, because when the influence tokens are also the endgame points, people are very hesitant to spend them, and the whole game revolves around spending them to do stuff. So have to make it worth your while to actually spend your influence points to make more influence points. But Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to test that new version yet, so we'll see where that goes when I get to it. Then the other thing is Tempest Imperium, which I am tentatively thinking of calling Tempest Imperium Eternum, which translates, I mean, the whole thing is Time Empire Forever. So, like I talked about last time, there's tons and tons of map variants I can do for this. So, I have been working on that a bit. I'm hoping to get this at least a version I can send out to playtesters sooner rather than later. I've got to fine-tune numbers right now. I just tested one the other day, and it was just a medium difficulty map, and I ended with a score of negative 115, which that's very low for a medium difficulty map when I know the game pretty well and understand things I should do. So definitely have to tweak some numbers so that a moderate score on a medium map is at least positive. But I've come up with a couple ideas for it that I will share. So I think I'm going to get rid of the easy, medium, and difficult versions of each map. Not get rid of them, but change that, the wording, really. So right now, the difference between the three difficulties is not the starting layout, but the pieces that get shuffled to make the unique map. So on an easy map, you start off with more houses and less enemies, and there are less mountains in the mix. So for those who don't understand the game, it's a roll and write that you don't roll dice. The date and time is used to generate a 6-digit number, which will set up your map and be your actions that you can do. The enemies are just a space on the board, and they are basically, they take your money every round, so money is some of your points. So if you leave the enemies around, they will do more damage to you, and also if you don't get rid of the enemy before the end of the game, they are negative 20 points. Right now, that might also change. So more enemies makes it more difficult. So in the easy version, you have very few enemies and a lot of houses. Houses are semi-beneficial. They're not the best things, but they're better than an enemy for sure. And then mountains. Mountains are basically just an impassable or semi-impassable obstacle on the map. So the more mountains there are, the harder it is to build up your network and you can get connect to things. So the harder difficulties just had more enemies and more mountains as the starting setup. So my idea came first from wanting to somehow balance all of these maps, because they're very different, and just the different layout, actually, in some cases, a different layout adds more difficulty than changing the starting number of items. So even a hard layout for an easy map could be harder than an easy layout for a hard map, if that makes sense, if I said it correctly. So the thought was to come up with basically a rating system. So how good is your score? And convert your score into a 5-star rating. So if you do very well, you get the 5 stars. That's quote-unquote the best you could do. I definitely know I cannot calculate a perfect score. It might not even be possible, depending on variables. But 5 stars would be whatever is reasonably a very good score, but hopefully possible. And then 4 stars would be whatever percentage of that, 3, 2, 1. So that was the idea, and something I've wanted to add for a while. And I have ideas of how to actually calculate the possible points of a map. But so that gives me a way, once I can get it to work, gives me a way to kind of balance the difficulty of a map. So maybe one map you could only get 50 points, and another map you could get 300. But on both of those, that would be the 5-star points. So you'd still hit 5 stars, even though it was a different number of points in the game. But what that brought up is if I balance various maps like that, I could also balance the easy, medium, and hard maps like that. So then an easy map and hard map could still be converted into a quote-unquote balanced 5-star rating. Which, why even have difficulty levels if that's what you can do? But the different difficulty levels are still an interesting different setup. So I think I'm going to change it. Instead of having the 3 difficulties for each map, those will just be different variants, and I can actually add more now than the 3 and have different setup numbers and stuff. So it's just another dial I can turn to generate even more maps. So still working on that. Gotta figure out some numbers and test some more, and then hopefully get some rules written up and get it out to playtesters to really get a better handle on what kinds of scores people can get, because I think that's going to be real important, is getting that tied together. But the other thing I've been thinking about a lot with Tempest Imperium is what unique things can I do with the fact that I can generate so many unique maps. As I think I mentioned on... I definitely mentioned it on other podcasts when I was talking to Riley, either on mine or on his podcast, but I might have mentioned the last Design Diary. But the thing I planned on doing was having every backer, or every dollar, be a new stretch goal that would add a map. Still planning on doing that. I really like that idea, and I want to get a bunch of maps out. But I also thought of a way to help with, quote-unquote, marketing. So, obviously, I need to find reviewers to get the word out. So, because I have so many maps, or so many potential maps, I mean, some exist, but they'll be redone. My plan is every reviewer, who I would normally, you know, send a copy of the game, will get their own unique map. And my plan is to talk to them ahead of time and get their branding. So it'll be branded to whatever their podcast or show or personality, whatever they want to brand it with. So they'd get a unique map that is branded to them. And the only way anyone could get that map is from them. So they would be able to freely distribute that map. So the plan is it becomes a collectible item. So people can go try to find all the different reviewers' maps, try to collect them all. And essentially they can also give out a sample of the game. So if you want to try it out, you have one map, you can try it. And with the system, each map is a full game. You could just have the one map and play it dozens and dozens of times and get different experiences based on the setup and stuff. So maybe I'm cutting into my own market, but honestly, this is not really about making money. I'm selling access to potentially thousands and thousands of maps for a dollar. So it's not about the money, because it's board game design. But I don't know, I just think it'd be really neat to be able to give out all sorts of unique stuff. And then that leads into, what other ways can I just give away more maps? So, yeah, I'm thinking just any place that I end up sharing Tempest Imperium could have its own unique map that you could only get from that place. So there can be one that is a downloadable file connected to the Board Game Geek page that you can only get from that link on Board Game Geek. And do another one on PNP Arcade that will be free, and it's the only one you can get. You can get that on PNP Arcade. But then still have the large collection of maps that would be what people are backing for. Whether I do crowdfunding or after crowdfunding sales. And every sale from that will add one map to the collection that the $1 gets you access to. So that'll still be a growing collection of maps that only costs a dollar to get in. So the more people back that, the more maps exist there. But there's still, I don't know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of free maps out there that people could find. I don't know, it just seems like something really interesting to do, and it would be fun. So, I don't know, see how all that goes. Obviously, got to get the game working before I can start sending it out to reviewers, but hopefully playtesters is reasonably soon. Just got to really dig in and get those numbers working in a way I want, and then write the rules, which writing rules for this is, it's been a tricky thing, though I have versions of the rules from past things, so I've got a base to start from, but it's strange. It's such a simple game to play, but it is very tricky to explain clearly in written words. Pictures help, so. But this, I'm actually thinking of doing some animated stuff on the website, and that'll be the only rule since it's just a print and play anyway. And that might be even easier to show people if I have the animated rules. But that's also more work to put it together. But yeah, so that's an update on what I've been working on. Been really distracted by this app called Builderment, which I think is only on iOS, but you build factories and connect them with conveyor belts, and you take the raw resources and you process it through, and that makes a thing, and you mix those things together in a different factory. It's been just sucking up my time. It's so interesting to me. I love factory simulations and just connecting all the buildings, but it is time consuming and a distraction. So I've got to do less of that and more design work and podcast recording. Actually, tomorrow I've got a recording with Joe Slack, so that should be up pretty soon after this, now that I don't edit things very much and just get them posted. So listen to that. Obviously, the contest has begun. We got, I want to say 31, maybe 32 judges signed up right now. Most of them are on the judge page. Some wanted to remain anonymous, though they're not on the judge page. But we're definitely still looking for judges to sign up, so if you're interested in helping out, it is so easy to judge. It's watch a 2-minute video, look at a sell sheet, and then rate it on 1 to 11 on two categories. How do you like it overall, and how exciting was it? And then give some written feedback, which, I want to say I'm asking for 250 characters or something. It's a couple sentences. It's not a lot of feedback, minimum. I mean, you are welcome to give more, and some people have given much more. But yeah, so judging is super easy, and if you have any questions about it, please reach out. I want as many judges as possible and a great variety of judges. So if you have never judged a game contest before, you are a potentially great judge. And if you are an experienced judge from other design contests, feel free to judge too. And if you're a designer, that's great. If you're not a designer, anyone can judge as long as you are a good person and give kind feedback. So just, head over to theboardgameworkshop.com, click on Design Contest to the top, and that'll get you all the information on that. And if you're looking to submit, submissions are due June 15th, so still plenty of time to get things ready. And if you know any schools or anything that have design classes, especially high school or middle school, I'm looking to give free submissions to students. So if you know any classes like that that might be interested in submitting games, reach out to me or have them reach out to me, and we can set something up to get them to have some free submissions. And also I'm going to try and do free submissions through other groups. And so if anyone is a group that or knows a group that would be interested in free submissions to the contest, talk to me and let's set something up to get people into this contest. We had just short of 150 submissions last year, and I think we'll possibly have more this year, but we shall see. Still months to go, and I've got to do a lot more advertising for that and get on some podcasts and all that stuff, and also do all this design work I'm talking about and do my real job and my chores. So life is busy, but I'm enjoying it. Games are fun, so I can't complain. So let's call it a podcast. That's a shorter one, maybe half an hour. But yeah, now you can listen to a different podcast. And like I said, I'm talking to Joe Slack tomorrow, so that should be up pretty soon after this, or maybe even before. I don't know. We'll see if I actually get to this. I'm rambling now, but yeah. So thanks for listening. Have a great day or night whenever you're listening to this. Bye.
That's all for this episode. Financial support for Board Game Workshop is provided by our annual game design contest and our Patreon supporters. Special thanks to our Inventor Level supporters.
Button Shy Games,
Chris Turner, Brad Batchelor, Roscoe Shock, Bass Cottis, and Yaima Games. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/theboardgameworkshop. You can contact the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Go to theboardgameworkshop.com for links, past episodes, and information about our design contest and other events. Thanks for listening.